You are tuned to We Are Queer on WERU Community Radio, 89.9 FM in Blue Hill, Maine. We Are Queer highlights the touching experiences of Maine's diverse LGBTQ+ community. From coming out stories to exploring a new chapter, WERQ is a voice to the queer people of Maine, building empathy and understanding in our greater community. I'm your host today, Pepin Middlehauser, and I use he/they pronouns. I am the regular host of the Next Wave Radio Hour, also here on WERU, but today, I'm here filling in for Olivia Peruk, as Olivia is actually the guest in today's episode. This is the last episode of WERQ, at least for now, and we wanted to get perspective from the creator of this amazing program.
Yeah. Hi, I am Olivia Peruk. I use she, her pronouns, and I guess I had been hosting We Are Queer for the last 6 months, something like that. Yeah. Bit of time.
We swapped seats.
We did. I know, it feels like full circle. Pepin, you were the first released episode, and now you are hosting the interview for the last.
The last episode, yeah. So, getting a little bit of your story, your personal story, your experience, and, you know, the background of why you engaged in this project to begin with. What is your experience and your experience with being queer?
Yeah, I think for myself, it was definitely like a journey, like so many other people I've known and interviewed. And it was cool to see my story mimicked in lots of people. I think for myself, I probably, you know, we moved around a little bit when I was younger. And so when we moved to Maine, we were always in pretty rural areas. And so I think queerness or the idea of like queer people just wasn't something I had access to. And I feel like I was raised in a pretty progressive household. And I don't think it was something like my parents were like trying to like hide from me. I think it was just generally within my immediate circle, there really wasn't any people. And I don't know when I quite heard about queer people, because eventually I did know about like gay people. And so in my head for a while, I was like, either you're gay, so you only like the same sex, or you're straight. And that was my definition of queerness. It was like, either you're that or you're this. It was a very like binary kind of on off perception. And I never truly felt like that made sense for me. Like I knew, I was like, I don't think I'm gay. But also like being straight also feels weird. And so I think it wasn't until I was older, maybe in high school, where I really got introduced to different topics. And I think this was mostly through internet Googling, as so many young queer people do, like, am I gay? Test quiz. Let's go down and see. And then eventually I think I discovered the term bisexuality, which I think for my first time in my life, I was like, oh, there's a middle to gay and straight. And that was such like a mind-blowing experience where I was like, it's a spectrum, which now in my later life, I have a lot deeper understanding. But when I was younger, that was a really revolutionary topic. And I think that was when I truly started to view like connections I had with how I viewed women as well was also maybe fit more into this term bisexuality than purely being like a lesbian or straight. And so I think for me, that was really eye-opening. And I really do remember that happening around high school. But I think looking back, I could have seen feelings I had for girls in middle school, maybe even younger, I'm not sure. But it's really just having access to knowledge, which really allowed me to be like, oh, wait, hang on. I didn't know this was a thing. And maybe I agree with it. And I think that's really interesting.
How was your experience with coming out externally? Like, you know, past the experience of figuring stuff out yourself, but moving towards expanding that into the world?
Yeah, I definitely found it surprisingly hard. And I still find it hard. And I knew I wanted to tell my parents. That felt really important to me. And but it is interesting. Like there's, for so many people, like this idea of coming out can be a really big thing. And I think it is still a big thing because in society, queer people are not totally 100% accepted. I think we're seeing that more and more today that, you know, we maybe haven't been in the most accepting place as we thought we maybe were. So I think for a lot of people, it is still scary. I'm still really not out to a lot of my extended family, which I feel like at this point in my life, I'm just kind of like, when it comes up, it'll come up, or maybe it never will, and that's fine.
You're out generally, but you're no longer tracking people down, essentially.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. The biggest people was really my immediate family. Like, I think I told my sister pretty early on, and I wasn't really worried about her like disowning me or anything. She's also, and then like there was many times where it was like, oh, and then we also ended up having similar journeys. And the first, I had this moment where I remembered I had made this plan to tell my mom, and I had thought of so many ways to like tell my mom. And for some reason I thought my mom was going to be easier, and maybe it was because that a couple of years before I'd really kind of solidified my own perception of how I believed. I think my mom, well, I later just found out my mom thought I was a lesbian for a long time. She still sometimes thinks I'm a lesbian, which is fine. But she had these moments where she would talk really passionately about if one of my daughters came out as a lesbian, like I would be protective and like would stand up for them. And like she would make these statements broadly without, you know, either myself or my sister having come out to her. So I think having that rhetoric of like, okay, I have a supportive parent, even before I was out, was helpful and was more confident, but it was still scary. So I had planned this trip to go see a movie, which was a gay love story. And then I was like, great, on the car ride home, we're going to talk about the movie and then I'm going to tell her and it's going to be perfect. Except the one problem I had with this plan was my mom hated the movie. And it wasn't for the gay love story. She just didn't like the movie. And, you know, we're very passionate people in my household. So I was like, well, now this is really awkward. And I waited the entire car ride home because I was like, my plan is ruined. My perfect image. And so it wasn't until we drove into the driveway and we turned the car off and I like turned to my mom and I'm like, the reason like I brought you this movie and I wanted to have this conversation is because I'm bisexual. And my mom turns to me and goes like, well, I thought you were gay. And so it was just a really funny exchange that we still talk about. It's one of my favorite stories to tell because, you know, you work up something, but still there's not always that, you know, I think for a lot of people that sort of like, oh my gosh, am I going to be safe with this new identity in my familiar context? And thankfully I was really lucky where my parents were super supportive. I think for my mom, it was a lot harder journey for her to also understand like bisexuality because she was very confused by it. And so I think she's continued to learn. I've been really proud of her as people and like my friends have evolved and like the concept of like queerness has evolved and how I would now categorize the spectrum and like the fluidity. Like I think my parents are much more aware of that now than they ever were before. So I think that was just like a cherry on the top of kind of like this beautiful mess of like what it means to come out. And I think for other people it was more like my friends, like just a conversation. I remembered somebody who I at this time identified as a woman who kept hitting on me and they're like, why don't you just tell her like you're straight? And I was like, well, because that's not true. And so those little things came out. But yeah, I think it was just a lot of like accepting myself, feeling comfortable with those people, and then finding a space to tell them if it was imperfect or not. And, you know, I'm still doing that. And I think now I'm a little more private just because unless I know somebody, because I don't know, it just feels like it's for me and that feels sacred. And I don't want other people's opinions to necessarily like detract from my own personal beliefs about myself.
I can definitely relate to that feeling of having an incredibly supportive and, you know, the track record has been great with my family, but still this feels like a big thing and still feels scary and is still a huge weight that is holding you down until you can actually get through it. And then it's confirmed that it's actually okay.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like just, you know, in my own listening to people and doing these interviews, I realized that I still had a lot of internalized homophobia. And I think that was something I wasn't really aware of. And I think just societally, again, I don't think it was my parents who pushed this view on me, or I think like maybe extended family, but I do think, you know, just society in itself and, you know, not seeing representation. I think people would now argue, well, isn't there a lot more representation? It's like, yes, but if you still feel unsafe, like if there's still, you know, I'm thinking in global context too sometimes. And it's like, if you're not safe to like hold a hand of a lover in a different country because you will be persecuted, then you aren't truly safe. And that does wear on you sometimes. And I think that was something that I hadn't realized in my experiences, that I was like, oh no, I like love the queer community, like gay people are great, like it's so great, but maybe not for me, even though like I also identified in that way. But I think that's such an interesting moment when you still have to work through blocks of yourself and really allow yourself to, yeah, to like love whoever. And I think it's frustrating sometimes because I'm like, I feel like I'm so progressive and I'm like, support everybody, but why can't I support myself? Yeah. And you know, I think that's just like part of society and kind of the dismantling. And, you know, there's so many things I think about my personality that's been shaped by society and the dismantling and reclaiming of those identities. And I think, you know, for me, like my sexuality and like who I'm attracted to, unfortunately, are something that I do. Yeah, like it is a bigger weight, it feels like, because I know it isn't always safe. And I know I'm extremely privileged. So I'm like, from the super privileged angle, if I don't even feel safe, you know, there's so many other people who, yeah, I really, my heart goes out to like everyone in the queer community that, you know, this idea of safety is not a given, which is, yeah, very sad. You know, to be a bit blunt, like I did many of these recordings before the election happened.
Yeah.
And I think for a lot of people, there was definitely a different momentum, I think, coming out of the Biden administration and then going into the Trump administration for a second term as president. And I do think that, you know, like for a lot of people in the queer community, that was a scary signaling to happen. And, you know, I think we've seen a lot more rhetoric, anti-trans people, anti-trans kids, especially out of sport. That's a very localized Maine issue, but also national issue. And I think many people who are in tuned with the news definitely know and hear that. And I think for me, that's been a pause of kind of maybe people that I had previously talked to maybe now don't feel as safe as they once did. And, you know, I think we should never always chalk up everything to an election, because I think, you know, it's like it's hard, like politics are hard and, you know, we all have different views. But I do think in terms of like generally from the show and kind of We Are Queer, for me was more of a calling card of trying to be proud and own that. It does sometimes feel a little bit frustrating when it feels like, oh, maybe that isn't as helpful or people don't actually believe that anymore. And I don't know, I guess for myself, like I know that the saying like love is love is like always a calling card of the kind of queer community, but for myself, I think it really is. It's like just how I, you know, try to love my really Republican, Trump-loving neighbors and, you know, other people I don't necessarily agree with. Like, I try to be compassionate towards all people, and I would hope that people would do the same to myself in the queer community as well. So I think those are just things that, you know, having this conversation kind of like a recap is always something I think people should be aware of, especially for queer friends and relatives or people that you might know, that maybe the queer community right now is feeling a little in a kind of unsure area. I don't know how to exactly describe maybe limbo, a little bit of fear. So I would definitely say like check in. And I think signaling is so helpful. I cannot tell you how happy it is when I see pride flags, and I love it. Or rainbow bumper stickers. I've been really thinking I need to invest in some rainbow bumper stickers or stuff. And it is funny, like you might not realize like little things like that matter, but they really do. And I think it just is such an important message to remind people they're not alone. And generally, I've found a lot of support and haven't had too many interactions of people being really negative. But I do think it is important, like if you support the queer community or the LGBTQ plus community, like, and if you feel like confident to put a signal of support and love, I think that can do wonders, especially to somebody who may not be in a supportive environment. Those things really do matter. And we're getting close to June, which is, you know, Pride Month. And so I think, you know, even more so, I would expect that a lot of people are feeling, you know, proud. And I know for so many people who have, you know, many older generations with me than me have gone through so many protests and kind of really have done the legwork. And I think, you know, if this is our generation's time to do that, I feel like, you know, if you feel called and emotionally capable and that's how you best show up, like, awesome, great. But also I think, you know, just being there and living is also enough. So yeah. I also just want to say that because
existing is enough. Yeah.
Existing is enough. And, you know, I think just reminding that, like, that it is okay. And there are people out there who love and support you and believe that you should exist. And yeah, that's just important. So just want to say that.
You are tuned to WERU Community Radio, and you are listening to We Are Queer. I'm your host today, Pepin Middlehauser, and you're listening to a conversation I had with WERQ main host and creator, Olivia Peruk, on her own story as well as her experience producing this show.
So over the process of doing this show, I mean, you straddled the election for one thing with your recording, some of it before the election, some of it after, most all of your recordings before the actual inauguration. But what were some perspectives that you got, some thoughts you had, some influence from various people that you talked to that shaped your thinking or you really took on board or took to heart over the course of making this show?
Yeah, I think for me, it was seeing, like, obviously a lot of similarities between the interviews I had done, just of people's journeys and stories, just, you know, humanness and how, you know, we really are more similar than we think. I think also a lot of the earlier interviews I did, there was a lot of joy. And also something I noticed, like a trend, was a lot more joy from older generations of people I interviewed who, you know, they've been through the ringer. They've gone through many turbulent times, especially in U.S. history. And there was so much joy and just like proudness of like who they were. They're like, I'm in my 50s or 60s. Like, I don't care anymore. Like, this is like who I am. And it was funny. There was a lot more fear in younger generations. So for me, it was kind of inspiring to see like looking up to kind of my elders, my queer elders, and how like there was still joy and hope and just a lot of just self-conviction of just like proud to be who they are. I think that was like, and it's a good reminder, I think, especially for us younger people who are queer and who are going through these times, to remind ourselves that, like, you know, there is still hopefulness and that, yeah, like having hope and joy is also power. So that's always a good reminder as well. And just hearing like about the queer stories, it's so in flux at all times. And I know for some people that's really hard to wrap your head around because we live in a very binary society of kind of like this or that, black and white thinking. And queerness in many ways really opposes that. And I think like giving people flexibility and freedom to explore who they are is a lot of power. And, you know, if that's like your gender expression or identity or who you love or how you choose to love, like these are all very like nuanced and not necessarily straightforward things. So for me, I think I've just seen the power and resilience in that sort of thinking. And I've just been really grateful to kind of dismantle my own very like clear black and white right and wrong thinking. And I've been really grateful for the queer community for that. And I think a lot of the people I've interviewed, those have been kind of touchstones of really this like evolution and continued evolution and flexibility to like see who they're going to become. And acknowledging that like we don't have all the answers. And I think that's important. And, you know, I've been really proud to see my parents who, you know, came from a different generation, not as an open generation. And they've really been learning and growing with my sister and I. And my mom mentioned to me once that she felt so grateful to have the youth connection. Cause she's like, yeah, if I didn't have you guys, I wouldn't know about all the transitions and things and changes. And, you know, I think sometimes we can be hard on people who, you know, struggle with like if that's using correct gender pronouns and thinking. But I do think it is at, like for many reasons, like people are trying their best, but not always, but I think often. And I think that there's an evolution. And if we also allow people to evolve and learn, I think is also important and I think is very in line with queer thinking. But yeah, I think that fluidity is something I hadn't quite like pre-interviews been really thinking about connection with queerness, but now it's like I can't think of it any other way.
Do you have any insights on the perspective of being queer in Maine specifically? Maine is quite different than a lot of other places. It has the one real population center of southern Maine, of Portland area, and then the rest is quite rural. What is your perspective and personal experience having grown up here of that, the strengths and the difficulties of all of those pieces?
I would say overall, I feel like Maine is a pretty supportive state. There's definitely pockets and times that people have probably experienced microaggressions or not supportive feelings. But I think Mainers have we like our independence. We like our freedom. And I think that comes in with how we, you know, if I feel like, you know, if anything, from wanting to homestead, to be an entrepreneur, to, you know, being gay or queer or whatnot, like, we want the freedom to be who we are. And I do think that lends Maine to being maybe slightly more progressive. I mean, we've seen the state, you know, stand behind trans kids in sports, which for me was a really huge thing to see. You know, kind of that was a huge signaling of like, all right, Maine is behind trans kids. Now, of course, if you follow Maine politics, you know, there is dissent and there is, you know, people who are totally opposed to this policy and really adamantly against. So it's not like everyone's like, oh my gosh, we love trans kids. Like, I wish that was how it was, but it's not that way. But I do think, you know, overall right now, our stance is that trans kids can play in sports. And I think for me that has been encouraging to see that, you know, Governor Janet Mills hasn't folded and has stood by that. You know, the state decided, and that's the state right. And, you know, in the United States of America and how our system works, like, the states have rights. And so I think that's been cool to see. I feel like for me, like, being in Southern Maine, probably a lot more people assume that it's easier to be out. I think that there is a lot more queer signaling that happens. But I would say that, honestly, over a 10-year period, I think across the state, I've seen more signaling in places. It really hasn't just been us sort of like only in Southern Maine and never in Down East Maine. That's super not true. I think it's moved. Maybe it's the sort of identity and the learning of older generations. It's moved slower with like the kids and the younger generations moving through. But I have felt like there's been a more outwardly accepting push as well and throughout the state. I mean, I'm sure like anywhere in the United States, there's more pockets of people who, you know, that's really against their faith or their beliefs. And, you know, so it is what it is. But, you know, I don't know. I feel like in Maine, I haven't been too worried. I think obviously how I look, I present, like you were saying, very cis and straight, as in kind of like I look like a woman, I identify as a woman, but I also can look very straight. You wouldn't necessarily walk down the street and be like, oh yes, she's a lesbian, or like, she's queer, oh my gosh. Like, or you might assume other people based on the way they look that you might think that they may have a different preference. So, I mean, I've generally felt pretty safe, but I feel like in my experience of like queerness, like I have found communities in, you know, Down East Maine to Southern Maine. And I can't really speak for Arista County and like more Central Maine, but I do think that there are pockets that are accepting all throughout the coast. I know a lot of people I interviewed were in the Blue Hill area and they felt really accepted in that area, even if people disagreed. And I think there's a charm of that, of, you know, even if people disagree in Maine, like, at the same time, we still kind of let people live their life. And I think that's also important. So, yeah, I think the one thing I would say, the one caveat about being in Maine, is information can move slow. And if you don't have access to the information, you can be behind, or kids are still learning. And the internet, you know, man, my internet goes out so often, and my electricity, I feel like more than like some countries I've been in that are quote unquote third world countries. So, you know, there's that too. You know, we're still a pretty rural state, and, you know, access to information is not equal across the state, and like resources are not equal across the state. So it is kind of like, you know, for some people, it might be harder to access information, but I think slowly now it's starting to trickle in even to the more rural places. And I think people are becoming more confident because they're seeing that other people are like them and they're not alone.
I'm curious if you have any perspectives on queerness and queer community as a cinephile, because you have another podcast with your sister that is all about films. And I'm curious if you have any insight, thoughts, you know, perspective on the scene of cinema.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh. I mean, I know that there were totally queer stories that were being told back in the day. I mean, one of the earliest queer films, I think, was like one of the first films ever made, which is kind of crazy. Like my sister and I, we were doing back, I forget the exact dates, but it was like way earlier than you would expect talking about queerness. But what I would say that I've noticed now that I feel so excited for the younger generations, I guess Gen Alpha, oh my goodness, below me, is that they're having access to shows. And I just have to shout out the show Heartstopper. Oh my gosh, love that show. It's from the UK, based off a graphic novel. But I think that show would have been so helpful for me because it talks about queer identities on so many spectrums of young people discovering if they're, you know, discovering that they're trans or what it means to be trans or to be asexual, which is something we have not really talked about. And I think that's such an important thing as well. And, you know, queerness and what does it mean and stories and fears and anxieties and accepting parents and not accepting parents. I think those sort of shows and those little touchstones for people, especially if they don't have people to look up to, I think are just gems that I wish I had. I think I would have maybe figured out myself sooner if I had access to these shows and medias and just different perceptions. Like even I've seen baby books now or younger books that are depicting, you know, two moms and two dads or, you know, with kids. And, you know, I think if people see the possibility, then that can help change their mind a little bit. There was a term I learned in economics that I'm probably going to inaccurately apply here, but I just love the term. It's called decolonizing the imaginary. But basically the whole idea is just basically breaking down kind of and allowing people to really imagine a life that maybe they didn't see before. Anyways, I just want to say thank you, Pepin, as well for kind of flipping the script. It's been really fun to think about the process. And I know there's still so many things I'm thinking about. And yeah, I guess if anyone feels really called to want to keep doing the show, like definitely reach out to WERU. But yeah, it's been a really, really awesome journey. And I have felt so grateful to talk to so many awesome people. And yeah, those should be archived and you can hear them and hear the awesome wisdom of everybody. And yeah, it's just been a really fun experience. And yeah, I'm still trying to like hold that joy, the joy I know that I have for this community and myself and what is to come. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Olivia.
You're welcome.
Thank you to today's guest, Olivia Perouk, who not only shared her own story with us, but her experience creating and cultivating WERQ. Thank you also to Juniper Ginger, a local artist in Maine who created our theme music. And that is all for We Are Queer, at least for now. My name is Pepin Middlehauser, and as Olivia said before, if you would like to reach out about the show or are interested in joining the project, email info@weru.org with WERQ in the subject line. Thank you for being with us, and remember to stay curious and kind.